Good evening, everyone. Delighted to have all of you with us this evening. Join us for our Mahashivaratri celebration. It's always a very special evening at the monastery here. And Gurudeva describes it in Dancing with Shiva. This is how he describes Mahashivaratri. It's observed by chanting Shiva's names, singing his praise, chanting Sri Rudram, and bathing the Shiva Lingam. And of course, these activities are common in all Shiva temples on this night. Gurudeva adds two more activities, which you don't always run into. Meditation, we got that one in already. And being near the monks as they strive to realize Parashiva, the transcendent aspect of God. So to do that, you probably have to go to a monastery or an ashram. But it is considered auspicious to observe Shivaratri with monks. And it's an interesting experience because it only happens a few times a year. Usually when you come into our temple here, there's one, sometimes two priests in the shrine doing the puja. So you've all experienced that here. So 9 a.m. puja. One priest, sometimes two if we have a lot of people. But on a day like this, all the monks gather and worship. So it's a rare experience when all the monks are actually worshiping. So you're joining in with all the monks in the monastery and worshiping with them. So that's what makes it a very special time. So simply stated, the essence of the celebration of Mahashivaratri is to have a deeper experience of God than is normally available to us on other days. So to explain that in more depth, I pulled together one of my talks, which is on Who Am I?, which was good. I had no idea what Gurudeva would talk about because I'm not involved in choosing it. So fortunately, our two subjects go hand in hand. So the best part of my talks is always the story. So I try to start with a story. So this is a Yogaswami story. A number of you have heard it, but it's a very good one. And we can all relate to it. So this is a devotee of Yogaswami's who was having was in a serious down situation, was having lots of despicable thoughts and really in the lower states of mind and very upset with himself. And that's where he was. And so, but being a devotee of Yogaswami, he couldn't stay away from Yogaswami. He really had to go, but he was very worried that he would go to Yogaswami and Yogaswami would be aware of all of his thoughts. And then, of course, he'd be very embarrassed. So he went into the hut and his thought was if Yogaswami was meditating, then he was in trouble. But if Yogaswami wasn't, he was all right. So he goes into the hut and Yogaswami's talking with devotees. And Swami looks at him and says this. This would be very disarming if someone said it to you, I'm sure. I know everything from your head to your toes. This is how he greets him. I know all your thoughts, not only yours, but everybody's. Then he explains, I am in everybody. You do not know this because you think of yourself as being separate from others. Learn to consider yourself as the same as others and not separate. Then taking the camphor tray that was burning before him, Yogaswami gave it to his devotee and said, take this light and considering everyone here to be Shiva, worship them. So I love that story because it shows how naturally Yogaswami was in the state of consciousness of being Shiva permeating all. When you're Shiva permeating all, there's only one person because Shiva's consciousness is everywhere and your consciousness therefore is everywhere as Shiva. So there's only one person. So you don't feel yourself separate from anyone. So that raises the question about who am I, which gets into this idea of oneness, and Gurudeva answers it quite nicely in Dancing with Shiva right at the beginning. Rishis proclaim that we are not our body, mind, or emotions. We are divine souls on a wondrous journey. We came from God, live in God, and we are evolving into oneness with God. We are in truth the truth we seek. That is a beautiful statement. We came from God, live in God, and we are evolving into oneness with God. So that is the consciousness we all want to strive for. Evolving into gives the sense that it is a gradual process. That, as we have been stressing in the earlier talk, it is a gradual process that doesn't happen overnight. Paramaguru Yogaswami also gives an insightful answer to the question, who am I? It's simple enough Tamil. I can say two words of Tamil. Nanyar. It's the title of the letter, Nanyar. Who am I? In one of his published letters, you are not the body, you are not the mind, nor the intellect, nor the will. You are the Atma. The Atma is eternal. This is the conclusion at which great souls have arrived from their experience. Let this truth become well impressed on your mind. In answer to the question, who am I? If you are not on the spiritual path, you think you're just a human being. You think I've got a physical body, emotions, and intellect. That is who I am. I've got an ego. I'm smarter than some people. Not as smart as others. Today I am sad. Later today I'll be hungry. That is who I am. I'm just a human being. Thus, the first step in deepening our answer to the question, who am I, is to take us beyond the identity of a human being into our soul nature. Thus, the first identity we have as a spiritual being is as an individual soul. What is the difference between feeling like an individual soul and feeling like a human being? As an individual soul, you feel spiritual. You feel perfect. So that's a key statement. You feel perfect. Nothing wrong with you. You feel perfect if you're identifying with your soul. It doesn't mean everything you have done has always been wise or right. It doesn't mean you are smarter than everybody. It just means you feel complete. You feel pure. You feel, I'm all right, right now. You feel like you are on a spiritual journey. You don't feel bad about yourself. You don't regret what you have done in the past, because that is not your soul nature. That is just your subconscious mind. If that is present, then you are identifying with your humanness. That needs to be gone, be gotten rid of. Part of making spiritual progress is getting rid of negative identifications about ourselves as a human being, what we did, how bad we are, how limited we are. Then we can identify with our soul nature as a spiritual being who is content and moving forward toward realizing its oneness with God. An important quality that is needed to be able to accept the Hindu teaching that our inner self is a divine being, a radiant soul, is a positive self-concept. So that's a very important point. We often talk about it. We need a positive self-concept. What is that? Such a concept is when we naturally think of ourselves as a worthy individual deserving of a wonderful life. Unfortunately, many of us reach adulthood with a negative self-concept, feeling that others are better than we are and life has little to offer. A negative self-concept is developed through verbally running down a person when they are a child. This can occur in two distinct situations. The first is simply making these kinds of remarks as a form of joking or teasing. This, of course, needs to be stopped and replaced with remarks that encourage and praise the child. Parents should also not allow their children to call each other names, such as fat or lame. When it comes to correcting misbehavior, it is wise to distinguish between the person and the behavior. The behavior was foolish, not the person. So we always try and do that. So one way of doing that, for example, is you say, boy, what you did was certainly stupid. But you're such a smart person, I know you'll never do it again. So the behavior was stupid, No, the person is smart. The person is intelligent. In fact, the person is so intelligent, they won't even make the same mistake twice. So that's distinguishing between the behavior and the person, correcting the behavior, and never correcting the person by saying they're stupid. When we take our spiritual identity one step deeper than identifying ourselves as the soul, Paramaguru Yogaswami's famous statement applies, bliss, 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 here, there, everywhere am I. Of course, the key word is I, right? Yogaswami does not say bliss, 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 everywhere is God. No. He says bliss, 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 here, there, everywhere am I. He is answering the question, who am I? But he is answering it at a deeper level than I am a spiritual being who is evolving toward oneness with God. He is saying he is omnipresent. He is all-pervasive consciousness. He is Satchit Ananda. He has gone into a deeper sense of I. He has gone into what we call the essence of the soul, the core of the soul nature, to the consciousness that is all-pervasive. It is always there. You don't have to create it by something you do. The soul body is maturing. It's like a tree. You plant a seed and it grows into a mature tree. It takes time. The soul body is maturing. It is changing. It is going through a certain process of becoming something more than it is. We had an interesting experience in New Zealand when we were there. We saw the kauri tree. And kauri trees grow to be 2,000-3,000 years old. And we saw one that was 800 years old. And, you know, it gives you a sense of how long it takes something to mature. So it gave me a new perspective on the maturing of the soul, which, of course, takes place over many lifetimes. But 2,000 or 3,000 years, that's about right. After that amount of living on Earth, we might be wise enough to move on. We might have experienced all there is to experience. So it's a slow process. But Satchit Ananda is always there. It doesn't change. You just have to find it. You just have to go deeply enough into yourself to find that part of you that is all-pervasive consciousness. Yogaswami did that. This is, of course, a significant step into evolving further into oneness with God. Paramaguru Yogaswami described this state in the following way. Satchit Ananda. That is one thing. Satchit Ananda. Sat is you are. Chit is omnipresence. Prakasha, light as from the sun, all knowing. Ananda is bliss. They are three, but they are one. That is your nature. Then there is one more step. Last but not least, one more spiritual identity is that of the transcendent absolute nature of God, which is described as timeless, formless, and spaceless, which again isn't a case of changing or becoming. It is always there, available to be claimed any time, day or night. There is nothing we have to do to earn it, realize it, become it. It could come at any time because it is totally outside of the realm of time and space. Doesn't become, it is just a question of finding it, claiming that part of your identity. The first obstacle to realizing the absolute is to feel, well, we have to do this, and then this, and then this, before we can realize it. I am confident I am not ready. Maybe 20 more years of meditation, I should be good enough in meditation to realize it. So we put it off for 20 years. We feel, well, I did this when I was young, therefore I don't deserve to be the absolute. Maybe next lifetime. We put it off because of that. To get rid of the first obstacle, we need to feel, maybe this very minute, I will realize the absolute. We have to give up the idea of putting the experience off, that now isn't the moment when we can claim to be the absolute. Because it has nothing to do with what we do. Because it transcends time and space. Time and space goes along and the absolute just transcends it all. It doesn't relate to what we do, doesn't affect being the absolute. Paramaguru Yogaswami described his experience of the absolute as follows. I climbed Mount Everest in 3 days. Just, of course, he's at the top of his head. That's Mount Everest. There is nothing. No sun, no moon. Then you come down and there is Dharma, Adharma, and all things. On another occasion, he described it as follows. If you think of the state of Shiva, which is beyond all attributes, it won't come. It will come by itself. One day when I was in that state, a bird came and sat on my head. Even yogis and yanis can't understand that state. Once we are able to see God in ourselves, we can see God in others as well. Interesting point. We can only see in others what is in us to some degree. It's like young children. They can't see so many things because it's not in them yet. They can't see in adults all kinds of qualities that are there because the qualities aren't present in the children yet. They have to get older. So likewise, if you see someone and see spirituality in them, what does it mean? It means there has to be some spirituality awake in you, otherwise you couldn't see it in them. We can only see in others what is existing in ourselves. So if we can see God in ourselves, the idea here is, well, then we can see it in others. If we don't see it in ourselves, it's hard to see in others. So we were talking about how to see it in ourselves, and Gurudeva was giving clues on that too. So if we can see it in ourselves, we can also see it in others, and it's easiest to start with our closest family and friends. That's Gurudeva's advice. Don't start with those you don't like. It's hard to see God in someone you don't like. We'll get to that in a second. But start with your family and friends, your family and friends that you like. And try and see God in them. And once you see it in them, you've made some progress. Look deeply enough in their eyes, you will see their soul, their inner light, shining out. This is not difficult. What is difficult for many is to see God in those we do not like or those we consider evil. Have you thought about that? In a hardened criminal, for example. However, God is there too. In this regard, there is a helpful quote from Paramaguru Yogaswami. See everyone as God. Don't say, this man is a robber, that one is a womanizer, the man over there a drunkard. This man is God, that man is God. God is within everyone. The seed is there. See that and ignore the rest. So what does that mean? Well, everyone is a soul. It's just that the soul may not be influencing our outer actions. But the soul is everyone. And around the soul, we have the rest of us. But everyone is a soul. That soul is divinity. So one of the ways I like to describe the soul and divinity is like a variable light switch and a light, because we're all used to that. And a variable light switch, you turn the light switch one way and the light gets brighter, right? So the light is always there, but the light switch has to be turned in order for it to become brighter. So that's like the soul. The soul is the light. Everyone has the light, in this case, physical light, talking about in them, but in many people, it's turned down very low. And over lifetimes, it gets turned and gets brighter and brighter. But the seed is there, as Yogaswami says. So everyone needs to be treated as a divine being. Even a hardened criminal needs to be treated as a divine being, meaning the goal is to help the person improve his or her behavior. That's what it means. We never give up on anyone because everyone is a divine being. We simply try to help them improve their behavior and in that way become a brighter light, function more in their spiritual nature. So this is the idea we're talking about tonight, is that in answering the question, who am I? A spiritual person thinks of themselves as a soul. And then we can deepen that experience into identifying with God, who resides within the soul as Sat-Chit Ananda, and Parashiva as all-pervasive consciousness, and as the transcendent absolute. And the deeper we go into ourselves and see God in ourself, then the easier it is to see God in everyone. And the ultimate challenge is to see God in those we don't like. And those we really have trouble getting along with, to see God in them, that is the penultimate challenge. Om Namah Shivaya. Thank you.